Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, I have some special guests on this week's program. Murray and Griff, the gentlemen from Golden Globus Theater, which is a very fun action movie podcast. Occasionally I pop in, but you should listen to it anyway. But yeah, I'm going to be talking to them a little bit, but I do want to get through a couple of titles just to kind of, I hate to say it, just kind of get them out of the way. Well, one in particular. But opening this week is a film called Golda, starring Helen Mirren as Golda Meir, and what happened during the aftermath of the Six-Day War, and Golda dealing with Egypt and the United States and Russia. And it's all set up with a tribunal at the beginning, at the end, which really doesn't pay off. But it's about Golda's decision to attack during what is now called the Yom Kippur War. The intensity between Israel and Egypt, and it was kind of, I remember vaguely the aftermath of this growing up as a kid, and she deemed Yom Kippur the perfect day to attack, and the idea of if she wanted the U.S. to help out, especially she had connections with Henry Kissinger, played by Liev Schreiber in this. He gets two really nice scenes, one with her and him and Mirren in the same room, which is probably the highlight of the film. If she wants more weapons from the U.S., if the U.S. even sends one bullet, then the Saudis are going to cut off the oil supply, which they wound up doing at the end of the decade, in the middle of the decade. So caught between a rock and a hard place. And there have been comparisons to calling her the Iron Lady of Israel. So it does have a feeling of the Iron Lady with Meryl Streep. It also has a feeling of another film that Helen Mirren did as the Queen. So I'm also curious to see if anybody's going to get on Helen Mirren. Well, the makeup department for Helen Mirren playing Golda Meir, the same intensity that they have with Bradley Cooper playing Stephen Sondheim. Just wondering. The director's guy, Nativ, hope I'm saying that right, N-A-T-T-I-V. Mirren's fine. She brings the strength and the gravitas to Golda in her performance. There's a little bit of heavy-handedness to the film. There's a lot of all caps moments in this. One thing we don't know, as we learn from the film, is apparently Golda suffered from anxiety. And we get to see those vulnerable moments, and kudos to Ms. Mirren, to Dame Helen Mirren, for capturing those. But we get things from as not subtle as, seeing wars on a screen. There is a moment where Golda is suffering so much anxiety that she's clutching her hands so tight that her fingernails cut into her, and she has blood on her hands. Yeah, it's that subtle. We also get a lot of nightmares with battle noises and cries that we get it. War is hell, and it's even affected Golda Meir. So that's probably the human aspect of it. Helen Mirren's the best reason to see this, but it is a heavy-handed approach from a directing standpoint. So Golda's open this weekend. If you like the Iron Lady and you like the Queen, you'll want to check out Golda. Now, earlier this year, of course, Oppenheimer was released, which many have deemed as the fastest three-hour film I've ever seen. And then I kept thinking of, oh, pity the next three-hour film that crumbs across my path, and how will it be by comparison? And it's the 1966 docudrama Is Paris Burning, which has maybe a third of the Screen Actors Guild in it. You get to see a lot of familiar faces. This is August of 1944. The Germans are kind of up against the ropes. And Hitler decides to give Gert Forbe, for you fans of Goldfinger, or as I just call him in this, General Goldfinger, control of Paris. And if he cannot hold Paris, he wants Paris burnt to the ground. So what looks like initially is going to be a kind of a race against time film of General Goldfinger wanting to plant bombs throughout the city of Paris. But it's also mostly about the rise of the French Resistance. We see folks like Alain Delon show up in this, as well as Jean-Paul Belmondo and Charles Boyer. We get to see the workings of the Resistance and its allies and the ones you cannot trust. Orson Welles has actually a fairly sizable part in this, more so than the likes of Robert Stack, Glenn Ford. Kirk Douglas shows up as MacArthur. As Patton. Also, Anthony Perkins, Simone Signore, Tony Chakiris, for you fans of West Side Story. The film is shot in black and white, and it got a nomination for photography, and well-deserved. I think part of the reason why it was shot in black and white is it blends news footage, second unit footage, really, really well. And this is also a film that has a prelude, has an intermission, Christopher Nolan, and has kind of a post-epilogue in the music department. So with all of that, runs under 3 hours. I think it's like 2 hours, 53 minutes. So not as fast as Oppenheimer, but there's a lull near the end of the first half, but it actually works pretty well and actually works at a decent pace. And this was also the time where, like, The Longest Day, where you had a lot of big names that did not a whole lot, but enough to show up and make an impact, especially in the case of Alain Delon and Orson Welles in this one. Leslie Caron is in this film as well. So it's on video from Kino Lorber, is the film from 1966, directed by René Clément, who I talked earlier a couple of weeks ago over the film with Alain Delon and Jane Fonda. Joy House. That was it. So, yeah. So this is the film, Is Paris Burning, is the film René Clément did after Joy House. I think there's also a Kino Lorber release of The Day and the Hour, which hopefully I will get to very soon. But, yeah, if you're into black and white mid-60s war epics, you could do worse. But it's a good, not a great film, Is Paris Burning, from Kino Lorber. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right. So I've mentioned over the last, whenever possible, in the last, God, a year or so, of Golden Globus Theater, which is a very fun action movie podcast based out of the Detroit area, which is very near and dear to my heart. I was born and raised in Flint. So anyway, I enjoy listening to these guys, and I've been a guest on their show a couple of times. But I wanted to have them on to talk about their show, Golden Globus Theater. So with that in mind, friends, here's Murray, here's Griff, and here's my chat with Golden Globus Theater. Enjoy! All right, I want to start with, and this is going to be fun, this is almost Radio Rashomon, kind of he said. Murray, how did you meet Griff?
Oh, my. We have a mutual friend, Mr. Mike Mullins, who's been on our show before. If you're a fan of Andy Sedaris, you probably heard him, who worked at a comic book shop. And Griff and I both shopped there. So I would come, since I was friends with Mike, I would come get my stuff and just hang out for a while, just talking with him. And then there's this guy, Griff, started showing up. And we realized we liked a lot of the same stuff, you know, and it kind of went from there. I mean, do you have anything to add, Griff?
Well, I mean, Murray forgets to mention that he was driving 50 minutes out to his comic book store.
Yeah.
Let's see, what some of the first stuff that I got, started talking to you on was that you told me you beat Ninja Gaiden as a kid. Was it Ninja Gaiden?
Yeah, well, that was one of them. And then that I beat Mike Tyson on Nintendo.
Punch Out. And I know Battletoads made it in there, and that's what kind of solidified it. Once you beat the Nintendo game Battletoads, it was all over.
Yeah. And since I'm like one of these people, like, I can't let a game beat me. I'm like, I have to beat this game no matter what. Griff's one of these guys, I can't beat it, whatever. I'll go on to the next game. So he gave it to me. And he said, if I beat Battletoads, Griff said he would get a Battletoad tattoo, which he still has not gotten. You owe me that.
Well, maybe he has it. We just don't know. We haven't seen it.
Oh, but I did beat Battletoads. Everyone, you should be impressed by that because it's the hardest video game I've ever played in my life. It took probably 2 years off of my life beating it. And, here's how it solidified, how we became good friends, and how this whole podcast happened.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally, Griff and I have the same birthday, March 11th. I'm much older than him, even though I look very young. I know everyone's surprised to hear. I'm 49. What are you, like 36, Griff?
Yes.
Yeah. So we met up for a birthday, and I was like, since we knew, at this time we had talked about all these movies we like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I got him a copy of Samurai Cop, which
ooh,
I had never seen at the time, and neither had he. But the cover drew it. The cover, first of all, had nothing to do with the movie. It's a picture. I thought it was kind of like a Maniac Cop type movie because it's a cop with a samurai sword holding a severed head. Which, if you've seen Samurai Cop, that does not happen. There is a severed head, but Samurai Cop doesn't take it off.
It's kind of like the posters in India for anything.
Yeah. I bought it for him, but I was so intrigued I had to watch it first, even though it's his present. So I watched it, and then when he came up to where I lived, we were gonna go out to dinner. I was like, Griff, this is the greatest bad movie I've ever seen in my life. And then he watched it, and he agreed. And that's kind of what solidified the love of Amir Shervan's Samurai Cop.
Nice. And how long ago was that? Is that over 5 years at least, right?
Oh, yeah, because we've been doing this for 5 years. So I can't even remember. How long have we known each other, Griff? 10 years?
I mean, the fateful Samurai Cop birthday was probably 2014 or 15.
Okay.
So,
yeah, at least as far back as that.
So I'll get to the show in a little bit, but for each of you, and I'll start with you, Griff, what was your local video store and what was the theater you went to the most growing up?
Oh, cool. So we had Video Mania that I would go to, and that was on, like, I lived close enough. We were part of the border for the part of Detroit people don't like to talk about. So Murray's also in the same situation. Just across the street is Detroit, and the parts that people don't want to brag about, you know, the rich people are all in downtown Detroit. So it was like you would cross the street, and then you're into the sad area, but Video Mania was where I went. You would be able to rent a video for one whole day. And so you really had to make a good decision. And so when you're an 8 or 9 year old, that's based on the cover and knowing exactly who Jean-Claude Van Damme is and maybe a Steven Seagal and sometimes even Schwarzenegger made my list. As for theaters, like, I think two of the theaters we used to go to are closed now. Livonia Mall has become a Walmart, and the Wonderland Mall has become a Target. So both theaters I went to as a kid are gone.
Of course.
Yeah, and let me think. I think our first video store was one called Videomatix. It was in Kego Harbor. There was nothing. I live in a wasteland. There's nothing where I live. So you always had to go out to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first, and I remember they only had like one copy. That's why Blockbuster was so amazing, because, you know, most of these mom and pop shops just had one copy. So there's movies I never got to see because it was always out. So, yeah, so I went there, and then eventually the Blockbusters came in, and we sold out, and, you know, we just went to Blockbuster.
Right.
And as far as theaters go, oh, God, it was one in downtown Pontiac called the Huron Theater, which, funny enough, I saw Return of the Jedi there, like, a year after it had been released, because that shows you how long, like, before videos were a big thing, how long movies would play.
Yeah, they would.
Then that, like, either that night or a week after it, the place burned down. Fire burned down.
It was that kind of an experience for you, huh?
The showcase, which I might be wrong about this, but I think it was the first ever multiplex in Michigan.
Yep.
Because it was like a 5-theater theater on one side, and then on the other side of Telegraph Row, which is a main drag in Detroit, there was another 5-theater thing. So it was like a multiplex, but they were kind of separate at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's basically where we went.
Yeah, we had a show place in we had a place called Burton, which is east of Flint, and that it started at 6, and then, like, you know, most they just kind of got larger and larger, and like the visual in Bachelor Party, you know, there's one theater, it's just literally a closet, or at least it felt like it.
Yeah, I don't think people, like, really remember that. Like, it used to be you would have a bunch of theaters all over town, but there'd only be one or two, theaters in them.
Right.
You know?
Yep. Okay, so, Murray, I know you're closer to my age, and I know within the last year you did, I think, if not your favorite action film, and so I'm loading up the question. What was the first action film that knocked your socks off?
Oh, it's probably, what you're alluding to, The Road Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that. I didn't see it in the theaters. I was a little too young, but I saw it on, like, HBO, like, a couple years after it came out. And to me, it's the greatest action movie ever made. It's got the greatest chase scene ever filmed. Sorry, Bullet fans. I'm going to call it that. And, yeah, I mean, we did for our 5th anniversary,
yep.
We did a series. We're a comedy podcast, but for Road Warrior, I was like, we still brought some comedy, but I was like, I got to be serious about this because it's a perfect movie. I can't rip on this movie. It's too good.
Mm-hmm. And, Murray, what was the film that made you get an earring?
That was Griff.
Oh, Griff? I'm sorry. No, it would take a lot, Murray.
Boy.
Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. I've never had an earring.
So the movie that made me get an earring was it was Hard Target. Like I said, I was always picking up the Van Damme movies when I was at the store. I forget what year that came out. I might have even got to go to the theater. Like, that's what we were doing with kids back then. And when I was 7 or 8 or something, getting to actually go see Van Damme movies. And he had that dangling hoop earring. And I was like, I need that. So me and my older brother both got hoop earrings that summer whenever it came out.
Okay, nice.
Oh, my God, your brother, too? Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
left loop, right loop. Well, it meant a lot back then, not so much now. So, well, you know what that means, Griffy. It means with your ears you took a chance.
Thank you. You took a chance.
A chance. So... All right, so the podcast, of course, is Golden Globus Theater. What was the first canon film that caught your eye? And Griff, with your earring, I'll ask, which one caught your eye first that you noticed as a canon film?
I guess that would be Bloodsport. I don't remember how canon even entered my brain because I never recognized any of that kind of stuff for the longest time. And so eventually it was just like, oh, it's got to be Bloodsport. It's got to be that movie because that was one I watched over and over. And once I finally, like, learned about canon, it was like, that's the movie right there.
Mm-hmm. All right, Murray?
Yeah, I'm with Griff. Like, I had no idea, like, what companies made movies or whatever, but it would probably be Revenge of the Ninja, which today is still my favorite canon movie of all time. Because... I didn't see it on the theaters. It probably was on, like, USA Network or something like that. I probably – my first canon movie in theaters is probably Invasion USA, which is one of the few Chuck Norris movies that I like. So, yeah.
Good call on that. That's pretty good. Okay, so yeah, Golden Globus Theater. It's been over 5 years now. So what is the process that you two have as far as selecting the film? And I know you do more than just canon films, but because you also have, both of you have really good eyes and ears on what looks and sounds like a canon film, even though it's not a canon film.
You know, I don't know if we have a process. It's just like things will just come to me. You know, right now we're doing like a month of just actors that we love, not like huge actors, but I didn't think of it that way. It just started happening.
Okay.
It's just, we've been doing this for so long. It's just organic now. You know, obviously we do have theme months, but it just comes to me. I can't really explain it.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there was a list. I know recently you did a film based on a suggestion that was McBain, and I know you get suggestions from NPR D-bags from time to time as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're always open to suggestions from fans. I mean, like, we never claim to be experts. I mean, we're not even experts on canon film, you know? I mean, we're just fans like everybody else. So, yeah, I'm always up for, you know, we don't know every movie, you know? So, in fact, one of our favorite movies came as a result of doing this show, Get Evans, starring John D. Hart and Wayne Towser.
That's right.
You know, we didn't even know about that. And this guy's like, hey, a fan was like, check this out. And at the time, it was impossible to find. So he sent it to us. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is right on. It's not Samurai Cop's my favorite good, bad movie, but this is like really close second.
Mm-hmm. And for those who, you got to listen to GGT, as I like to call them, because it sounds like a tag team in wrestling. But you guys have, it's true. You guys can pick out which one you want to be. But you guys really raised the flag high on dudes like Wingshauser and Steve James. And it's all the podcast world's all the better for it.
Thank you for that, because I feel like that is kind of what we're trying to do. Like, anytime we're having that dark moment where we're staring into the soul of Golden Globus Theater, we're like, what are we? And it's pointing out, like, everything going on, all the weird scenery that's happening in these, like, low-budget movies, whereas now when you see a low-budget movie, it's like people really phone it in. You see these very, very drab backgrounds or settings and everything. Whereas, I mean, we just, Murray, what did we just do?
Killing American Style.
And you can't look at a background without, like, I want to know the story behind that painting, behind that detail. Why are they on this ranch constantly? Like, you want to know so much. And I talked about it in the episode, but then I reflected with a good movie, like it had a good plot and everything, but everything about it was just boring in the background, and all the houses just looked like McMansions with nothing in it, and it just didn't really live and breathe like some of the movies we do. And then just being able to really pump up a Steve James, Wingshauser, Billy Drago, Red Brown, mm-hmm. like these guys, they showed up to bad movies and they gave it their best, and you see it on the screen, and you can just, if you can appreciate someone trying to make, you know, something out of nothing, then there's so many good movies in like the 70s and 80s and even early 90s to enjoy,
which is the wheelhouse of this show. And do you guys remember the first Steve James film that you noticed, or at least Steve James performance, I should say?
It'd have to be American Ninja for me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Same.
Milhouse agrees. what about Wingshauser? Because I have a specific memory the first time I saw Wingshauser.
Oh man, like Wingshauser, I've kind of known of him for a while, but I never really truly appreciated him until we started doing this show.
Mm-hmm.
It was Gatevin. Like so blown away, because it was obvious that he had been given a script. He said, screw this, threw the script in the trash, and was like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And he does, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I saw back in the early incarnations of HBO, I was probably 13, but I got to see Vice Squad on cable. And yeah, that's when mom and dad are away. And yeah, he's absolutely electrifying in that. And he became that guy, you know, before you commit the name to memory. So to see him pop up in something like an episode of Hunter or in a quote unquote legit film or a Best Picture nominee like A Soldier Story, you know, and the guy's been constantly working ever since. Yeah, have those films. We all have those films where you wait until mom and dad leave. So,
well, I just recently remembered because we did Nowhere to Run, the Jean-Claude movie, that was banned in my house because of some of the risque scenes.
Murray, did you ever have any movies banned from the house?
No, I had horrible parents, so my mom let me watch whatever I wanted. Jeez. I remember my mom would take me to R-rated movies. My mom took me to see Jaws when I was 3. I mean, that's traumatizing.
I was 5. Same thing. Yep.
Yeah. It's just like,
you guys both turned out great.
I'm Gen X. You know, our parents weren't in our life.
Yeah, mine was just constantly working, but you know, they followed, it was parental guidance. They were, you know. Then R-rated movie, there's dad. Okay, sure. So,
well, I've always said about my mom, she was just like an action movie snob. Like she would never like take me to see a Jean-Claude movie or something, but Schwarzenegger and Stallone were like that higher budget, so that was acceptable.
Oh, you know? Wow. Oh, yes.
And it wasn't like she was offended by it. It was just like she was a snob about it. She was an action movie snob.
Just the screenplay nuances. Wow. So, okay, so the other thing is we talked about actors that you guys dig. Where did the hatred for Robert Ginty begin?
Okay, yeah. I didn't even know who Robert Ginty was until we did this show.
Oh, wow.
So at the time, this is early in the infancy of the show, so I was kind of concentrating on canon movies.
Mm-hmm.
We are going Globus Theater, after all. So I saw The Exterminator 2. So I watched it, and I was so offended by the schlubby, scrawny guy trying to act so tough. I mean, on one of our episodes, I went on a whole rant about I hate fake tough guys, and he's like the poster boy for fake tough guy. I never believed him in this movie, or in any of his movies, for that matter. Because, of course, when you go from Exterminator 2, you got to go to White Fire, which people who aren't familiar with that, he is a bank robber, a jewelry thief who's in love with his sister, and then she dies. So he meets a woman who kind of resembles his sister and has her have plastic surgery to look like his sister so he can sleep with his sister. So that tells you all you need to know about Robert Ginty right there.
Incestuous.
Not to mention,
yes.
Steve James had to play second fiddle to Ginty.
Yeah.
He had to be the sacrificial lamb to make the rage come out of Ginty.
The jowly rage.
Yes, the jolly rage.
Oh, man.
The worst. Ginty, thank God you're dead.
but you have shirts in his honor, or dishonor, I should say.
Well, that was a gift from our buddy Phil, another one of our guests. He knows how much we hate him, so of course he has to send us some T-shirts with Ginty on them.
All right, you mentioned fake tough guys. Who's in the fake tough guy film of The Expendables?
The film of what?
Think of The Expendables, but all fake tough guys.
Oh, God. Well, I'll just tell you, guys, they weren't really known as tough guys, but they were occasionally in tough guy roles, and I never bought them. I would put, like, Richard Gere in there. I'd put Michael Douglas was one, and I'm like, what? He's not tough. God. Who else? I went off on a whole list when we did this.
Okay.
You got any, Griff?
Oh, man. I can't think of any good ones off the top of my head right now.
Are they led by Sensei?
Yes and no. I don't know. I mean, you're right. I don't believe Sensei is tough. We're talking about Steven Seagal.
Well, and I guess I should also preface old Steven Seagal as opposed to young Seagal.
Yeah. Well, he's totally like, I mean, the new Steven Seagal movies usually are just,
he is with a group of young people, and the young people do all the physical stuff. Well, he just stands around with his goatee, his chocolate donut goatee. Well, yeah, I'm drawing a blank, but yeah, there's plenty of fake tough guys to go around.
Okay, that's pretty good.
I'd say Bob Odenkirk fits into fake tough guy.
Yeah, it pains me to say that because I love Bob Odenkirk, but I did not buy him in that movie. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that called? I don't even remember.
Was it Nobody or Nothing or something?
Something like that, Mr. Nobody. I don't know. Yeah, I just because he's like a super badass. You know, that's what I didn't believe. You know,
mm-hmm.
It was just like he flips a switch, and all of a sudden he's like super. Well, another one is Keanu Reeves. We just did John Wick, and I'm like, I mean, I don't have anything against Keanu Reeves. He seems like a good guy, but I was just like, okay, you know, I mean. I just didn't buy it.
You know, you told me about it, and then I went and watched it. I don't remember whose recommendation it was, but we were clued in about a movie, and I use Clue In heavily here because Clue Gallagher was the tough guy in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So was he like that, 60?
Yeah, I don't think he...
Or was it...
I don't think he had a lot of tough roles, but... Oh,
or was it from 1960?
That was a tough one to watch him.
He beat up Billy Drago, so it's not that, you know,
yes,
out there.
Right, but he was the backbone for that whole group.
But at least Billy had the hand acting, as you guys like to point out.
Yeah, always, hands are always moving.
Yeah, what movie was that where we first discovered the hand acting?
Was it Delta Force 2?
It was Delta Force 2 with
the hard-boiled egg was amazing.
Yeah.
Nice.
So good.
All right. Yeah. So also what has now become staples of the show, where did the origins of tippy taps begin? And then let the folks know what a tippy tap is in your world.
You want to take that, Griff?
Murray? Oh, okay. I'll take it. So that was a Jean-Claude Van Damme featurette. That was him in the original... that's Kickboxer, right?
Kickboxer, yeah.
Okay, I should know this. The Laserdisc mounted on my wall. but yeah, so it's during that movie where the older brother, we never remember the names. We know they're the Sloans. There's Kurt,
Eric, and Kirk, I think.
Kurt. Yeah. Kurt. Yeah. And so the little brother, Van Damme's character, he went to France because they always have to explain Van Damme's accent. And so his mom took him to France, and the older brother stayed home. And that's why they have different accents and different upbringings and all that. And so while they're just, like, sparring out on this field, Jean-Claude starts doing these tippy-tap kicks. And I think it's Eric's, the older brother. He starts saying, "No! Give him the power," and he hates the tippy. And we just obviously these are the little bits that we love to talk about on our show, and it's just obviously blown up. I think we did a Kickboxer 3.5 years ago, and it became the whole impetus for our TV show kind of sideshow where we talk, you know, about TV shows, TV show sideshow. So yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole idea behind the tippy tap is, like, we get it. Like, we know people's attention spans are short, and we like to talk, if you ever listen to us. So our episodes are usually 90 minutes to 2 hours long, because we get deep into it. We explain everything. So I was like,
yeah,
how can we entice somebody just to try us out? Let's do, like, shorter episodes. Well, the attention was shorter episodes.
Yes.
So we came up, like... These are the episodes that don't have that power. They're the tippy tap episodes. So we cover like a 45-minute television episode,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that was basically the impetus behind the tippy taps.
So as you get, dear listeners, it's kind of guys at a bar or at a restaurant chatting. You just don't have a bad jukebox in the background and other people talking around you. It's just these two guys, sometimes three people, if there's a usual suspect in the mist. So, and Griff, how did you get Griffmas in July?
Well, it's just baseball likes to do this promotion where they do like some kind of July type Christmas event, and Murray really has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to figuring out the show and trying to socialize with people, where I is, you know, it perfectly lines up with what I do for a living. Like, I'm in the background just trying to stay quiet and putting the ones and zeros together. So it was my way to really just riff up the show, let Murray have a week or month off of like picking episodes and everything, and that just give it a different flavor, because Murray has something that sparks his eye, and then I find movies along the way, or I have suggestions, and so it's just my time to really shine. Not that any other time I could say, Murray, I want to do this movie, and he wouldn't put it in the mix. It's just he just completely gives the reins over to me and has to deal with it.
Well, that's generous of you, Murray.
Yes.
and that's it.
That's it.
And, of course, Golden Globe of Theater also has, you have Blaxploitation Awareness Month, which I'm always happy about and down for, as well as Schlocktober, which I know you guys have been probably prepping for when it comes around. What films that you two have covered have been your biggest surprises and your biggest disappointments? Murray?
Oh, my God, that's a good question. Oh, man. Biggest surprise.
Yeah,
you have anything, Griff? I need to think about this.
I would have to look over the list of some of the movies we've done, because I don't know, just amongst the living day, I forget about the show by the time it's over.
No, I understand. I understand. You're like a coach.
Yeah, right. It's the thing. I mean, this is honest. People think we're messing around. Like, people will mention something we said on this week's show.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll go to Griff. What? When did I say that? I don't remember. Very stream of conscience.
No, yeah, I believe I did that to you guys about Wisconsin strip clubs on last week's show, and I forgot you. It had taken a few days after you'd done it.
Yeah, and I had no idea what you were talking about. I was like, oh.
For somebody who records a show on a Wednesday that airs on a Saturday, and then you're like a head coach, or you're like, I'm already thinking about next week's show. I'm not even thinking about last. You know what we just did. I understand that.
Yeah, exactly. And we're the opposite. We record on a Saturday and put it on a Wednesday.
That's what the circle of podcast life happens here, friends.
Exactly.
Do you guys keep a chart? Do you keep a list? Do you have something on the wall with pushpins and yarn and stuff?
No, we've got a very punk rock attitude about this show. We just let it rip. I mean, there's no prep. It was very little preparation. I mean, when we watch the movie, we take notes. You know, mm-hmm. cause we go through the movie chronologically. So we don't want to be like, oh, wait, and then this happened, you know, 5 minutes ago. So we do that. But as far as like a lot of the jokes, I mean, we always find we work better when we're just riffing, you know, and like Griff will say something, will spark something with me, and then back and forth. And that's just the way we like it, you know, cause I mean, I don't like stuff that's super prepared. I've heard like people who have podcasts where it just feels stiff, you know, mm-hmm. and it doesn't feel natural. And I don't want that from our show.
Yeah. And if you've been in like the quote unquote bad movie circle, it's like a 45-minute show where they just say, this was dumb, this was dumb. We go through the whole episode, which of course a lot of people are upset about the fact that we actually do a 2-hour episode, because we want to like kind of travel through the whole movie as it comes to us and, you know, add to it or whatever. But we really give these movies the time of day and to think about. Like, one that I was really annoyed but also impressed by, Murray, number one with a bullet.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, I think Robert Carradine is in the not tough guy Expendables.
Tough guy.
Yeah, he's in
Robert
the
Carradine.
He's in the Expendables.
There we go. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned punk rock because you also will do a film series out of order because it's your show.
Exactly. Yeah, we're known for that. We'll like start a series on episode like 4, and then we're like, oh yeah, we'll get to those other ones later.
Nice.
Yeah, I think Kickboxer is the only one we've done in sequential order.
And how'd that work out?
Maybe American Ninja. I don't know. But, yeah.
Cool.
I mean, we just want – it's like I said, there's no plan. So it's like, oh, I just want to do part 3 of this series this week. And we just do it, you know? I mean, unless we have, like, a theme like you alluded to, which, I mean, we've done a lot of theme episodes throughout our thing. Our only constants, as you pointed out, are Blaxploitation History Month and Schlocktober because – I like horror as much as I do action, so it's always nice to have that break in October to do some horror. But yeah, it's just, you know.
Oh yeah.
Well, and
no game plan. Let's just do it.
And to mention what you saying, Griff, as opposed to other podcasts, they say why something sucks. They talk about how something sucks. You guys break into why it sucks, and there's a big difference.
Yeah. We get really under the hood. We don't do a surface level show. We really want to talk about all the scenes. Usually we really enjoy the movies we cover. There's very few that we're like, this is outright is bad. I mean, a lot of these movies were just, they're not really handled by a lot of people. So you get a very raw product that's like director to actors to, you know, screenwriter. And based on what I see from those movies compared to what you see in some of, you know, modern movies, some modern like low budget movies, it's just fun to see that. It's just very weird and raw, and I kind of love it.
Yeah, I mean, we're not here to crap on these movies, you know. I mean, even the movies like, yes, Samurai Cop is an inept movie, but it entertains the hell out of me. You know, I love it, and I'm not here to, you know. And it's like the gripe that Griff and I have, and you probably share this too with like the movies nowadays. They're trying to get that kind of – you can't create this. It just happens.
Correct.
So, like there's no winking at the camera with Amir Shervan, you know. You're getting his best.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. I'm laughing at it, but at the same time, I respect and appreciate that this guy's getting a movie done, you know, and he's trying his best.
Yep.
And now it's just like everyone's so self-conscious now. And in all these movies, like, oh, well, yeah, we know it's a bad movie. That's what we're trying to do. And it's like, ugh, I don't want to watch that.
All right, so we're recording this on a Wednesday. This will come out on a Friday. Gentlemen, what are you talking about this week on the show?
Well, wow, I'm glad I just brought up Amir Shervan because we're talking about his second movie, Killing American Style, starring the great, another great one, Robert Zadar. So, yeah, that and we what did we go, 2.5 hours on that one, Griff?
Yeah, I edited it up this morning. We went a whole 2.5 hours on it. We got some nice – Jim Brown's in this movie, by the way. That somehow happened.
Yep.
Harold Diamond and his rock star hair.
Right. And we talked about Wings Hauser and actors who bring it to bad movies. Jim Brown, nowhere close to this movie. He is – so not wanting to be there. And we add in some of the nice audio of him going to a cat house, as they called it in the movie. So it was a really fun episode.
You just have to be careful if you're a lady and there's a window and Jim shows up. Well, anyway. Okay, can you, and also, so as far as planning ahead, I guess you, can you give us any hint of what might be happening for Schlocktober or might be happening in the next few weeks?
I don't know if I want to give it away for Schlocktober. I will say it's going to center around a very important horror movie actor.
Okay.
It's the one everybody knows.
All right.
Classic.
Cool.
Can't even give us one movie. I don't even know this information yet.
No, I don't want to give it away. In fact, I was talking with Matt. He's going to be on one of them.
And I will keep mum on this. But you should.
Amazing.
It's going to be it'll be fun.
Yeah,
so
right now, I'm enjoying talking about like all our favorites. I think I'm going to keep it going for another couple weeks. I think there's going to be a Wings Hauser movie coming up pretty soon. So
nice. Ooh. And I know somebody's making a documentary about Wings, so fingers crossed there.
Yeah, yeah. We like to follow each other on Twitter, yeah.
Cool. So there you go, friends. It's Golden Globus Theater. It's human-selected films. These are films selected by, you know, Detroit men doing Detroit men things. And it's just a fun conversation. And, you know, if you're also fans of hearing what concerts and wrestling they experience, that's also up your alley as well. Where can folks listen to you guys go on every Wednesday?
Well, it's a horrible radio call here because it's Golan-Globus Theater. So Golan-Globus space theater. Not the easiest on the tongue, but we're pretty prevalent out there in the world. So I think you'll find us.
And when it's
I would say it used to be easy to tell you about Twitter, but now Muskrat's making it difficult to look for us on Twitter. But I would say check us out on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, I would say follow us at GNG Theater, and you'll get all the news of what's coming up.
Yeah. And when it's October, it's Golan Globus Theater.
It's Golan Globus Theater, only in Schlucktober.
That's right. All right, guys, I set this up. Do you have any questions for the host?
No, I just want to say thank you for being such a friend of the show and being such a booster. You know, you mentioned us on your show, and we really appreciate it.
Just trying to do what's best. So, but yeah, I really enjoy you guys' work, and you keep me company in all kinds of ways. So, you know, keep at it and keep digging, and watch out for those certain parts of the city.
Now, we're giving you that have a Michigan question, love you need.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What, Griff? You have a question?
Yeah, of course I got a question. Let's see. I know you can't tell me about the movie you're going to be doing with us, apparently, in Schlocktober, but you also did a Blaxploitation Month with us. Is there another movie you're looking forward to doing on Golan Globus Theater with us?
Oh, anytime. Anything involving, you know, film sociology guest Fred the Hammer Williamson is good. I got an A in name dropping from Ball State. Anything involving Dr. Pam Grier is always good. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. It's your show. I'm just visiting.
Well, we need someone passionate about some kind of movie. So that's the kind of structure we want.
So, yeah, not a problem. But, yeah, whatever, you know, stuff like that. That'll be fine. But you know, we'll have to worry about that when we get down the pipe.
That sounds good.
All right, guys, I really really appreciate your time, and you know, keep doing the good work.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for your time.
There you go. Check them out, Golan Globus Theater. Really good guys. Really fun podcast. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we go around the horn, before we grab a pencil, a couple clarifications. One clarification and one recommendation. Earlier in the Golda review, I meant Bradley Cooper as Leonard Bernstein, not Stephen Sondheim. I can hear my kids screaming from Chicago. Because old white guy doesn't know his musical theater. So, sorry. One other film that I finally got to watch on Kino Lorber Blu-ray, and this is one I had not seen in a long time, and this is just one of those great feelings of this was on cable constantly and enjoyed it and has aged well in over 40 years. I think it had a limited theatrical run, which I didn't see in the theater. I know that my local video store, Family Video, was it Family Video? Before, not that Family Video, the individual. There was an individual video store run by a Flint newscaster. And sometime I'll share that story. But anyway, the 1983 concert comedy Get Crazy is been out. I think it came out last year on Kino Lorber Blu-ray. But it's from director Alan Arkush, best known for Rock and Roll High School. And in my opinion, I think Get Crazy is more fun than Rock and Roll High School, and I like Rock and Roll High School. This was originally supposed to be his Valentine to working at the Fillmore, and it kind of became wackier and sillier. And listening to the documentary and the commentary tracks, it makes fun of the concert film. of course, like The Last Waltz and like Monterey and Woodstock. But it also, and the different styles of music that wound up on one single lineup. But there's elements of Airplane, there's elements of the Marx Brothers, there's elements of Danny Kaye, as far as, I mean, there's constant jokes, I mean, and visual jokes, one after another. This is one you can watch a couple of times to make sure you didn't miss anything. And I know originally Arkish said he wanted it to be more of a Valentine, and it just kind of became a joke fest, but man, is it fun. So we have, it's New Year's Eve, 1983. You have groups like Captain Cloud, which is a send-off of the Grateful Dead and those groups. King Blues, send-off of B.B. King or Albert King. Nada, which was an all-girl punk band with horns. Malcolm McDowell, impeccably cast as Reggie Wanker, the British, the UK rock star, loosely based on Mick Jagger and of course Rod Stewart. Lou Reed is Alden, who's kind of a in hibernation singer songwriter like Bob Dylan or Leonard Cohen. And it's so much fun. So the wank rock and the punk and the blues and the hippie stuff all combined. With and there's a whole backstory between Alan Garfield, who owns the place, and Ed Begley Jr., who wants to buy it and destroy it, and that the behind the scenes aspect. Daniel Stern plays the stage manager, who winds up kind of running things. Arkish says this is basically his character. Gail Edwards comes in with the aptly named Willie Loman as his kind of love interest, who's also going to help out with the show. Lots of familiar faces. Bill Henderson is King Blues. John Densmore going against type. Ed Begley Jr.'s henchmen are played by Fabian and Bobby Sherman, which always cracks me up. Franklin Ajay is in King Blues band. Robert Picardo is the fire marshal. It's just it's so ridiculous and so much fun. Lee Ving is in this, and as I find out listening to the commentary track, that the producers wound up doing a Springtime for Hitler, or the producer's bit, where they found out they could make more money as a tax write-off than actually trying to make money at the box office. So the film unfortunately died a quick death in theaters, got a couple of nice reviews, and as I said, I discovered it on cable, and it just cracked me up. Everything from, you know, it makes fun of the drug culture and the concert culture and the counterculture. And the music's really good. And there's a fun story that McDowell tried to actually sing, and then he was told to just kind of Rex Harrison it, just kind of talk on cue. And this was also, I think, my first time seeing McDowell do comedy. I knew prior to this, I had heard of, I had seen bits of A Clockwork Orange, but I was still, you know, in my early teens. Time After Time, he's great in that as H.G. Wells, and then to just go full out comedy as Reggie Wanker, it's just enjoyable. So there's a commentary track and a couple documentaries, including a Zoom reunion with a lot of the cast members and designers and editors of the film, talking about the making of it. 37 days in a theater. They mostly shot it in one theater in Los Angeles. And anyway, it kind of hit at the right time, being 13, 14 years old. And since then, with my love of concert films, it holds very strongly. So, yes, thank you, Kino Lorber, for giving the film Get Crazy some extra love. And again, wall-to-wall jokes. And I hope you go look for it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Let's go around the horn, and then we'll grab a pencil. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, they are closed due to the heat advisory this weekend. No, that was Thursday. I'm sorry. Reading's a skill, friends. That was the Thursday date. Friday, this weekend. Yeah, same stuff. On one screen one, Gran Turismo. And on screen, also with Meg 2. On screen 2, Blue Beetle and Barbie. Screen 3, The first showing is sold out. There is an 11 p.m. screening of Strays and then a 12:30 screening of Back on the Strip. Screen 4, first show, sold out, private screening. At 11:45, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and at 1:15, Talk to Me. That is at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline this weekend is the Super Monster Movie Fest, Frozen Frights, including both versions of The Thing, 30 Days for Night, The Shining, The Invisible Man, Dead Snow, Krampus. So that is August 25th and 26th, two nights hosted by Sammy Terry. Vendors all weekend. Bring your tent to enjoy two nights of Dusk Till Dawn movies at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin this weekend, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., 3 days of the Condor, or to be locked in a bathroom with Robert Redford. On Wednesday, September 6th at 7:30 p.m. as a part of the Midwest Music Series, Selena. September 13th. Wednesday, September 13th at 7:30 p.m. as a part of the Midweek Music Series, The Last Waltz. September 15th and 16th, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1. Because you couldn't make a film... one film out of one book. Wednesday, September 20th, 7:30 p.m. as part of the Midweek Music Series, The Crow. September 22nd and 23rd, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Singing in the Rain. And then Tuesday, September 26th, Claudio Simeone's Goblin, live scoring of Demons, Dario Argento's Demons. That is happening 8 o'clock, Tuesday, September 26th, at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you got to watch some films, good films, that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Have I mentioned Golden Globus Theater? Good. All right, we start with Eric, who writes... straight out of Compton, and enjoyed it. And other Eric said, good film, was this your first viewing? To which other Eric said, it was, I enjoyed it. Thank you, Erics. That's a show. David writes, Oppenheimer, again. JJ writes, Old Boy, Mr. Mom, and Fall. Eric writes, first views. This is the other Eric. But the other Eric thinks he's the other Eric. First views, Broken Lance from 1954, and the Infernal Affairs trilogy. Though I'd seen the first one a couple of times, I'd never seen the companion prequels. Excellent. And Eric, thank you for reminding me that I have that trilogy on my pile, and I need to get to it sometime. The rewatches, Top Hat, Secretariat, Breakdown, and The Omega Man. First time in 52 years, and it's no Soylent Green. I know. And by the way, Golden Globus did a treatment of Soylent Green, so go check that out. I don't think they've done Omega Man. We'll have to work on that. But they also did Planet of the Apes. Jamie writes, Lego Disney Princess, The Castle Quest, Elemental, and Scary Movie 4. Amanda went to the library, Queen Charlotte. Lou Harry writes, nothing. It happens. Amanda also writes, Senior. Book Club, didn't seem the... yeah, okay. And The Sun. Thank you, Amanda. Jessica writes, The Devil's Backbone, The Orphanage, and Jacob's Ladder. Nikki writes, Oppenheimer, Princess and the Frog, and The Lion King. And finally, Bill writes, Oppenheimer, Godfather Part 2, Executive Suite, and tomorrow night we'll be seeing Barbie. Which means, Bill, next week you got to tell me you saw Barbie. So tell me what you have seen, not what you're going to see. And there you go, friends. The algorithms are weird this week. Got a short list. It happens. All right. So there you go. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Thanks again to Golden Globus Theater. Go give them a listen, will you please? Want to end this week's show raising a glass to... we have dead people we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like. But professional wrestler Terry Funk. Now, this reminds me, I have to get Ray Steele on the show very soon. But Terry Funk, Hall of Fame wrestler, one of the early hardcore wrestlers, great technician, great brawler, great with a microphone. It's just kind of the trifecta for professional wrestling. But he was also able to carve out a little bit of a film career. In 1978, he starred as Frankie the Thumper in the Sylvester Stallone-directed Paradise Alley. And Sly, according to the legend, Sly really kind of befriended the wrestlers in that film. It's set during the Depression and wrestling matches back when they went like 120 rounds. And while some of the actors would make fun of the wrestlers because they said that stuff was the F word. No, not that F word. The other one. Stallone defended the wrestlers because they also put their bodies through all sorts of torment. And just kind of he became an ally of the wrestling community. So much so, of course, you have a wrestler named Hulk Hogan in Rocky III. Funk would show up again in the Sylvester Stallone film Over the Top from 1987. He'd be one of Robert Loggia's henchmen that Stallone puts through a window. He'd also show up as one of the bar guys who gets fired and tries to seek revenge on Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse. So he's already got two cult films under his belt. Did quite a bit of TV, episodes of Quantum Leap, Swamp Thing, Tequila and Benetti, Good and Evil. Yeah, I'm reading from from the page. An episode of Thunder in Paradise with Hogan. Act of Stealth, I forgot about that. Act of Stealth, The Ringer was apparently uncredited in an episode of Friday Night Lights. So just showed up in a few things here and there. But the fact that he is in Paradise Alley, which I need to revisit, that was the film, I want to say that was the film Stallone did after Rocky immediately. So there's that. The fact that he's in a cult favorite like Roadhouse, and the fact that he's in a so bad big film like Over the Top, but he was always good. So yeah, salute to Terry Funk, man. I got to see him, I think, a couple times when he was with the WWE. Not nearly the crazy stuff that he's known for. No barbed wire or fireworks matches, or Texas death matches. I didn't get to see him do those, unfortunately. But you have the internet to find all of his stuff. Well, a good chunk of his stuff. So salute to Terry Funk. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll do this again next week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!